Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, August 21st. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from New York Oncology Hematology, announcing breast cancer oncologist Maria Theodulo. Now seeing patients in both the Albany and Hudson locations, NewYorkOncology.com for appointments. On this day, when many of us are looking to the sky to view the solar eclipse, Dr. Eric Veruto of Hudson Valley Eye Surgeons is in the studio. What do you think of that? He's here to help protect your eyes from the sun and discuss overall eye health. The number to call, as you know, is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can look it up, but don't look up. Dr. Veruto, your calls and much more are all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello, once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Many people across the country today are looking to the sky to view the solar eclipse. The Northeast will see about a 60% eclipse. The best viewing times are now until 4 p.m. While it is quite a sight, it also can damage your eyes. Here to discuss eye health this afternoon is Dr. Eric Veruto of Hudson Valley Eye Surgeons. He provides comprehensive eye care, including the fittings of standard and specially soft contact lenses. He also co-manages pre- and post-operative care for cataract, glaucoma, cornea, and refractive surgery cases. Dr. Veruto also has vast experience with the diagnosis and treatment of dry eye disease. He's a graduate of Stony Brook University and the SUNY College of Optometry. Dr. Veruto, welcome to Vox Pop.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, perfectly.
Okay, I'm delighted about that because don't want to insult anybody. You know, you never know. Somebody will call you up and say something to you. To participate in today's discussion, 1-800-348-2551. I said 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wmc.org, or you could go to Facebook at facebook.com/WMC Radio, or in the mode of Donald Trump, tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. Okay, gang, that's it. So I guess nobody's going to believe that we don't have Dr. Veruto on today because of the eclipse, but we don't. We knew you were coming. We did not schedule this because we knew what we were doing. We didn't, but how lucky can you get?
That was very well planned.
So let me ask you a question right off the bat. What is it that ruins the eye if you look at the sun in its eclipse form?
Well, it's very similar to if you were to stare at the sun without an eclipse happening. It's just there's too much concentration of ultraviolet light that comes from the sun through the parts of the eye, and it could damage various parts of the eye.
So we don't generally, and I was making the point, which was laughed off this morning, that we human beings have probably evolutionarily learned not to look at the sun.
Correct. Correct. Our eyes can't take it for more than a couple seconds because it becomes very painful. If you've ever been at the beach in the summertime
and looked at the sun,
you forgot your sunglasses and looked at the sun, you can't stare at it for more than a couple seconds full on without having to look away.
I never did that. But then again, I lived on a beach, but I never went to the beach because, you know, I didn't believe in that. But anyway, so that's interesting. So what kinds of complaints do people have when they come to see you or your partners about having looked at the sun or the eclipse?
Well, the tissue of the eye is similar to the skin in the sense that it can get sunburned very easily by too much exposure to the ultraviolet rays of the sun. So some typical complaints for having too much sun exposure, the front of the eye can feel very light sensitive, very painful, very sore. You can have blurred vision for any amount of time. You can see dark or yellow spots that are persistent. You can have pain in bright lights, loss of central vision.
Floaters?
Floaters are something a little bit different. They don't really come on as a result of too much sun exposure.
Right. So in other words, don't do it.
Bottom line, if you're not sure, don't do it without the proper glasses.
And the proper glass is important. Don't use sunglasses, right?
That's right. So regular sunglasses, whether they be polarized or not, are simply not dark enough to prevent the UV light from entering the eye to getting to the retina.
Right. So you could do it the way I do it, which is to watch it on television, or you could why take a chance, right?
Yeah, but if you're absolutely not sure if you have the right glasses, then you should not be looking at the sun directly.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I just couldn't agree more. Okay, we'll go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim in Matamoros, what do you got today, Jim?
Well, I pretty much already answered the question there. I was going to ask what part of the eye was most likely to be damaged by the solar eclipse.
That's a good start. Doctor?
Cataract.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for the question. I had mentioned earlier that the retina can be easily damaged, more specifically the macula area of the retina. Some people are more familiar with the term macula because it relates to macular degeneration. And if that area of the macula is damaged, you can have temporary and or permanent vision loss. The front of the eye, the clear dome of the eye, called the cornea, can also be damaged. So you can have what's called a photosolar keratitis or photokeratitis, which is the sunburn of the front of the eye, or you can have a solar retinopathy, which is essentially a sunburn of the back of the eye.
So sunburns go away? In other words, like if you have a sunburn on your arm, eventually, you know, you'll live through it, right? Unless it peels. It could peel.
No, sometimes the sun damage can be temporary. Sometimes it can be permanent. Uh-huh. It really just depends on the amount of ultraviolet exposure that the eye has received.
You get a lot of telephone calls from, you know, the AM radio stations say, "Doctor, we need 6 seconds on why not to look at the sun."
Over the past couple of weeks, I would say that we've had a definite uptick in those requests.
Yeah. So, right.
Sure.
Okay. Very good. All right. Thank you, Jim. As always. Let's go to. Wait a second. What happened here? I said hang up. Oh, it did. Okay. Now let's go to John. Okay, John. On the Warren M. Anderson Memorial Highway. Go ahead. You're on.
Hello.
Hello, John.
Hello.
Hello. What do you got?
I have a welding helmet. I want to look at the sun. I want to check the eclipse out.
Okay. The question then is, Doctor, if he has a welding helmet, you know, one of those things you pull down?
Yes, yes.
Would that be sufficient to look at the sun?
You know, I came across an article in the past couple of days regarding the use of welding helmets for viewing the eclipse, and apparently there are different grade filters that the welding helmets use. I don't weld, so I can't really speak to the specifics of each of those filters, but I believe there's something like a 12-degree filter, 13-degree filter, 14-degree filter. Not all of them are approved or recommended to use for viewing eclipses. Some of them may be, but I think you would have to do a little bit more research or maybe talk to people who have more experience with the different grade protection of the welding helmets.
And it's a little late now to do all of that research. So here's my advice, the political science PhD. Ready? Don't do it. Okay, thanks a lot. Bye. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can, of course, ask any question related to the doctor's eye specialty, and we hope you will, as Peter in Shelburne Falls is about to do. Peter in Shelburne Falls, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about blepharitis.
Okay, Peter. What do you got?
And that's dry eye.
So, So I'm managing it, and I've just recently been diagnosed after 5 months of being told that I have pink eye conjunctivitis. So I'm managing it with compresses and Simulsan and OcuWipes and so on and so forth. But I want to know, can I cure this without going to an antibiotic or a steroid?
That's a great question. As of right now, there really is no known cure for blepharitis. What we do is we like to treat the symptoms as best we can to minimize and mitigate the symptoms so that the patient can function normally on a daily basis.
Wait, What is blepharitis?
Let me back up. Blepharitis is a low-grade inflammation of the lids and the lashes, which can lead to symptoms that are very similar to dry eye. It's often found in conjunction with dry eye, and it can make the eyes feel burning, itchy, red, and tearing. It can make the eyes light sensitive, an overall discomfort, intermittent blurry vision. It's not a very pleasant condition to have, especially in the more severe stages.
And the name is blepharitis?
Blepharitis,
yes. Blepher.
Blef?
Yeah.
Aritis.
Aritis. I thought it was like when Ray Graff plays poker. As in blepharitis.
No. It's blef comes from the root for lids, and itis is an inflammation. So when you put them together, it's an inflammation of the eyelids.
Okay, and the manifestations are that what are the symptoms?
Well, the manifestations, when we look at a pair of eyelids under a microscope, we see that there's a dense crusting at the base of the eyelashes, almost like a dandruff-type material that builds up at the base of the lashes. And that dandruffy, flaky material starts to seep into the eyes, into the tear film.
Oh.
And that causes a breakdown of the tear film, which leads to dry eye.
And what's a tear film?
A tear film is the natural layer of tears that you have coating your eyeball, protecting it from the outside environment.
And so that leads to dry eye? No.
Well, when the blepharitis breaks down the tear film, you have less protection against the environment and against the back of your eyelids. So the skin of the eyeball becomes more inflamed as a result of that.
Now, I noticed that our caller makes it clear what he doesn't want to do, what they call it, antibiotics? And
There's a multitude of ways and treatments out there for blepharitis and for dry eye. And the treatments range anywhere from cleansing your lids with special shampoos and lid wipes, artificial tears to replace the tear film, hot compresses. Oh. Some doctors in the more severe cases will prescribe an oral antibiotic to decrease the amount of bacteria on the eyes.
We have to take a break, but I wanted to ask you one last question about this, and that is, you said you looked at the lids and lashes under the microscope. So how do you get that off the guy's face in order to do that?
Get what off
the eyelids? You're looking at under the...
We have a special microscope called the slit lamp in the doctor's office that we use to look at the lids and lashes.
I see. I get it.
We don't have to remove anybody's eyelids or face from their skull.
We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Lathrop Retirement Communities, communities of older adults devoted to social responsibility and personal and intellectual enrichment, Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, lathrop.kendall.org. Nathan Littauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, featuring a booth at the 176th Annual Fonda Fair, August 30th through September 4th, nlh.org. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Services, offering assistance via a new website, findalawyernys.org. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. And from Culligan Water of the Northeast for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work, culligannortheast.com.
And we are back and having fun here. Michael from Schenectady, it is your turn. Michael from Schenectady, you go.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Regarding the eclipse, why not just take a selfie with the sun at your back?
Okay, it sounds like you're in the frozen tundra somewhere with the wind blowing. Okay, doctor, why not take a selfie with the sun at your back?
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, if your back is turned to the sun, your eyeballs are not directly exposed to it. I don't see any immediate risk to the eyes.
What if you're looking in the camera itself?
The camera is not going to be able to project the damaging UV light that comes directly from the sun.
Which is why we're watching it here in the studio on the television.
That's right. It's very similar to watching it right here on a television screen.
Right, right. Michael, any follow-up on that? No, I think he went away. Okay. He got blown away. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Gladys in Lake Placid. Okay, Gladys, always happy to have a Lake Placid person with us. Go ahead.
Okay, I had cataract surgery May and June. My both eyes membranes that the new lens is situated near has developed scar tissue. Could I be allergic to the material in the new lens? I've been told I need to have laser treatment done to correct this. I'm just curious about this.
Gladys, that's a great question. Actually, the development of scar tissue behind the implant lens after cataract surgery is a very, very common occurrence. So that is not anything to worry about. It's something that cataract surgeons deal with all the time with patients after they've performed the cataract surgery. A simple in-office laser procedure should clear up that scar tissue for you and have you seeing much clearer immediately.
Okay. So it's not really an allergic reaction?
No, it's not an allergic reaction to the lens.
And how did she? Okay. How does it happen?
Because when you have cataract surgery, your natural lens is removed, and an implant, an acrylic implant lens is put in its place.
I have it.
But in order for that acrylic implant to sit in place, it sits within a natural membrane behind your pupil, behind your iris, that your old natural lens was sitting in. And that's a piece of biological tissue. And just from the manipulation of that tissue and from the new lens going in there and rubbing up against it, it develops a little scar. It develops a little scar tissue over the course of a couple of months after cataract surgery.
Gladys, thank you for the great call. Appreciate it. Okay, now we're going to go to... We're going to go to Meg in Schenectady. Okay, Meg, it's your turn.
Hello. Hello, Alan. Hello, doctor.
Hello.
Actually, you're both doctors.
There was someone who deny that. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm calling 6th Avenue. I live.
You're dropping out. Hey, Meg, you're dropping out. Could you say whatever you just said again? Go ahead.
Apologies. My husband has a bump on his right eyelid, on the upper lid, that used to be pretty prominent, and I suspected a sty, except it never bothered him. And now it's become an all-over redness, and the initial bump has kind of died down, but it looks like that eyelid is kind of swollen about halfway up the lid and along the lash line. And I'm just wondering... He hasn't seen a doctor for it quite yet because I can't seem to drag him anywhere near anyone with any sort of alphabet after their name. But we're trying to figure out what to do regarding that. I'm trying to figure out what to do regarding that.
Well, as you know, this is Alan, we don't diagnose over the radio because it's very dangerous. But in general terms, Doc, maybe you could answer this.
Yeah, if you ever have a change in lid appearance and something seems to be going in the wrong direction, the first thing you need to do is get to an eye care provider, a doctor immediately to have it checked out. But the most common reason for lid bumps and lid swelling are usually styes that have kind of gone on a little too long. Sometimes those styes can get infected with bacteria and turn into these little abscesses within the lid, which can cause immense amount of swelling and tenderness. And they may need antibiotic treatment, not just drops, but oral antibiotics as well. So it's really in your best interest. If you see it getting worse and the lids are getting thicker and more swollen and more tender, have it checked out and treat it immediately. Because if it goes on too long, it can turn into something very painful.
But isn't a sty bacterial in the first place? No,
not necessarily. Styes can be clogged oil glands that are simply inflamed.
Interesting.
It's like having a pimple inside your eyelid.
Awesome. At least so excited to hear about the possibilities.
Don't you see? Okay, Meg, thank you very much for the call. Good call. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Bye. Okay, and now we'll go over to Dave in Albany on line number 3. Not that it matters. Go ahead. Dave in Albany.
I just want to know a little more about ischemic optic neuropathy. I developed it in January, and I lost about 80% of the vision in my right eye. And from everything I've read and what my eye doctor has told me, after 4 or 5 months, it's pretty much if you get anything back, you do, and if you do not, you do not.
Yeah, Dave, your eye doctor, first of all, if you have been diagnosed with ischemic optic neuropathy, it's very important that you be followed by an ophthalmologist who's familiar with the condition or with a subspecialist, a neuro-ophthalmologist. But anytime you have a condition where the optic nerve is inflamed and there's optic nerve damage, he's correct in the sense that after a few months, if your vision doesn't return, there's a good chance that it will not come back. The optic nerve is part of your central nervous system, and that nervous tissue, once it is damaged, is irreplaceable and it cannot regenerate. So unfortunately, if that's the case, then he's probably correct, but it's still important to follow up with him as per his recommendations.
What about the other eye?
It does not. If your question is, does it jump to the other eye?
Yes.
Can you get it?
Yes.
Can you get it in the other eye? Yes, you can. Does it necessarily mean it's going to jump to the other eye? No, it does not.
What about in your case, Dave?
No, it hasn't. She said there's probably about a 30% chance that it might, being as it was caused from either too much blood to my optic nerve or my optic nerve got starved of blood.
Yeah.
I do have blood pressure issues. So you guys will probably appreciate this. I stopped driving semi-truck because, you know, I figured I couldn't see as well. So I figured I would get out of the semi-truck and just get a different job. So, it kind of shocked me when it happened, but I'm over it now.
What are you doing now?
It is what it is.
What are you doing now, flying airplanes?
Yes, I'm flying airplanes and driving trains. No, I just got a regular job. I drive a delivery van. Yeah, it's much shorter. It's much easier. I can drive a regular vehicle just fine. It's just seeing back that 70 feet that a tractor trailer is, I just feel like if it was on a rainy day and I didn't see a car and I wiped out a family, that was going to be on me. And I just figured it was better just to get out. They said I still can pass the eye exam for DOT. They would give me 20/40, but I just figured I would just, sometimes you just got to realize when something's over and take the high road. And hell, I'm 61 years old. I'm next to retirement anyway. So
and it'll save your kidneys too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
you're
I've
looking at that
my boat over the road for 25 years, so I don't think there's any hope for them. But.
And the other thing, Dave, that we tell patients who've lost vision, whether it's from optic neuropathy or from other conditions, once one eye has been severely damaged, please protect the other eye as much as possible. Protective goggles when you're doing anything that puts your eyes at risk,
sure.
Whether it be grinding stuff in the garage or
sure.
Sawing using an electric saw, or even something as simple as mowing the grass. Wear protective goggles and wear sunglasses when outdoors as to protect that other eye from getting damaged.
And certainly don't look at the sun.
Yeah, especially that.
Yeah.
No.
Hey, Dave.
I'm not looking up, and power tools are not my friend.
Hey, Dave, what a great call. Thank you for your humor and for your approach. Appreciate it very much. Bye.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye. Okay, and we'll go now to Carlene in Ballston Spa. All right, Carlene, I have permission from Joe Makowitz to take your call. Thank you, Joe. Go ahead, Carlene.
Hi. I was just told in March that I'm getting cataracts. And I've had this blurry vision for several years. I was wondering, how will my doctor know when the cataracts need to be removed?
That's a great question, Carlene. That's something I answer just about every day in the office. And I tell my patients that it's really not for me or the doctors to tell the patients when to have cataract surgery. I like the patients to tell me when they want to have cataract surgery.
Well, how do they know?
Well, I tell them it's when I can't make your vision any better with a new pair of glasses and you're unhappy with your vision to the point of where it's starting to affect your quality of life. You feel that you're not able to do the things that you normally would want to do. Your activities are affected. Your driving's affected. Once you really start to feel that your vision is declined to that level, then it's time to have a serious discussion about having the cataracts removed.
It's so cool. You know, when I did my cataract surgery, I went in to renew my license in Massachusetts. And the lady said, look, and let's see if you can do it without your glasses. I said, no, I can't do it without my glasses. I looked in, and sure enough, no glasses.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that was after the cataract surgery.
Yeah.
After cataract surgery, we can actually calculate for your eyeglass prescription and make it so that you're less dependent on glasses.
Well, yes and no. And Carlene, I want to warn you about one thing: the doctor or the nurse always says, when you read, where do you hold the book? Now we think.
Where are you asking me?
Yeah, no. The doctor will ask you, where do you hold the book when you read? And most of us don't know where we hold the book when we read. We think we know, but we don't. So I told her the wrong place. So now, you know, I have my glasses have to correct for that. For looking
well, I want to ask one other quick question that's related. I just heard an earlier caller talking about blepharitis. I have that too. Ooh. And would that affect my give me this blurry vision? It's for close-up. And I have glasses. I have a new prescription and everything. But it doesn't seem to help much because when I do detailed work or read, I have to use a magnifying glass to read anything in addition to my eyeglasses. But I can see 15 feet ahead of me just fine. I can count the leaves on my echinacea out here.
Blepharitis in conjunction with cataracts can also cause another level of blurriness to the vision. It's hard when you have multiple issues going on to determine exactly which percentage of your vision loss is caused by each condition. But yes, blepharitis can cause an increase in blurry vision as well if it's at a severe enough level.
You know, I am so interested in this whole phenomena of doing this show, you know, Medical Monday. Because I've never heard of blepharitis before today. And we've had lots of people in your profession, you know, on.
Really?
Yeah. But nobody's ever called for blepharitis. Now this has turned into the blepharitis show.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Carlene.
Thank you, Carlene.
Bye.
Okay, so it's 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you got a question about blepharitis or looking up or any of that stuff or contacts, you call us. And we'll go now to Barnett in Hancock, Massachusetts. Is that all right, Joe? Barnett, yeah. That's number 6. Okay, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have two quick questions. One is, well over a year ago, I saw a program about a breakthrough that was done in Russia. And the medication was prescribed. They were able to put it together for a dry eye to begin with, although it addresses many other issues in terms of the optic nerve and a bunch of other things. But the thing they got it patented for was dry eye. And it's being explored and experimented with for over a year now at Mount Sinai. But I can't get it. And I was wondering if you knew about it. It sort of has some similarity to what methyl blue does, but it's, you know, it was developed pretty extensively in Russia. And so the second thing is, do you know about the work of Meyer Schneider, who Deepak Chopra took around some time ago, has done some very interesting things with vision?
So we're going to take a no on both of those, but we're going to thank you for calling. I can tell you that much. I appreciate your call. Bye. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Okay, I'm going to read you a couple of emails real quickly.
Sure.
I'll get those out of the way. Okay, good afternoon. I developed styes in both of my eyes, exterior and interior. They become fairly large. I've been given a prescription of
tobramycin.
Dexamet, yeah. Also using warm compresses, the interior stye in one eye continues to fill up substantially with yellow pus. Break and fill up again. TMI, too much information. It's been 2 weeks now. Normal. Cause, I'm recently exposed to a daily basis to a long-term building renovation. Thank you, Evie in Kingston.
I think it comes back to that word that of the day so far is blepharitis.
It's, no.
Yeah. People who have recurrent styes in their eyes, or styes that won't go away or styes that come back, they tend to have more of a buildup of blepharitis on their lids. Sometimes they have to start managing the blepharitis so that the styes don't come back. Styes can be treated in many different ways. They can be drained. They can be excised. They can be treated with hot compresses and drops and ointments. But ultimately, if a stye is not responding to a specific therapy, myopia, you really should see a eyelid specialist to have this dye professionally removed or looked at.
Wow. Catherine says, I went to Australia with Bob Berman and saw the total solar eclipse in 2012. It was amazing. Also, I once made a pinhole projector and watched a partial that was really fun, and I highly recommend doing it. I've made one again, and if you happen to have a music stand around, this makes a perfect holder for the pinhole card, allowing a larger projected image.
Yes, you can. That's is an indirect way of viewing the total solar eclipse. By using a pinhole projector method, where essentially you have a screen and you poke a pinhole through it, and the light from the eclipse will pass through the pinhole, and you'll be able to see the eclipse projected directly in front of that pinhole screen without damaging your eyes.
Okay, so Jeremy wants to know, I think I know the answer to this one, Doctor. I've read and heard that regular sunglasses should not be used to watch the eclipse. We've already covered that. Right.
Correct. Correct. They're not strong enough.
Does that go for sunglasses with UV 400 protection? I assume so, but I haven't found that answer anywhere.
Yes. Even the UV protectant 400 sunglasses, the UVA, the UVB protected sunglasses, are still not strong enough to protect you from the eclipse.
Do not take chances, ladies and gentlemen. And children. It's ridiculous. Okay, so now we're going to go to, number 7, Donna in Lenox. Donna in Lenox, you're on.
Hi, doctor.
Hello.
2 weeks ago, I went to my eye doctor because I had itchy, watery eyes. But when I put my finger on the outside of my lower lid, I felt a bump in there. And then I looked, and there was a big red glob. And I went to him, he said, put hot compresses on. Well, nothing... I still have it. Is this unusual, or should there do something else be done?
Well, it sounds like whatever it was not responding to the initial treatment. So
it was a blocked oil duct.
Yeah. Well, some people call it a blocked oil duct. Some people call it a sty. Again, going back to the previous question about styes, if they don't respond to the initial therapy, then they should really be looked at further by a specialist and be removed or treated in a different manner.
Is 2 weeks long enough to wait?
Yeah, usually we give about 2 weeks for any sort of therapy to take hold or effect. And if it doesn't really show any improvement in 2 weeks' time, we advise our patients to take it to another level.
Thank you, Donna.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we got a lot of people on the line. We want to get to all of them. So let's go to Jim in Schenectady. Oh, no. Zach points out we have to take a break. Then we'll come to Jim in Schenectady.
Support comes from Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, honoring founder Jim Cusack, continuing his work for over 4 decades and 4 generations. Helping the chemically dependent and their families battle addiction, villaveritas.org. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services, including legal publishing and corporate record searches. ColbyService.com. Lakeview Orchard and Farm Stand, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. You pick cherries, raspberries, currants, blueberries, homemade donuts, pies, pastries, kapusta, galumpki, and pierogi. LakeviewOrchard.com. And from Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook.
Thank you, Zachary, and thank you for your reminder to keep my eye on the ball here. Okay, now we're going to go to Jim in Schenectady. All right, Jim, you're on the phone. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. First off, thanks for taking my call. But, yeah, these pinhole cameras work fantastic. I poked about 20 holes with a thumbtack into a half of a file folder, and even right now there's great little crescents that I can project, holding it back about 2 feet, real simple. but I know a lot of people have talked about that, but back in 93 or so, my father and I caught a partial eclipse that we noticed that the pinhole cameras also happens naturally through the, say, the light passing through leaves of a beech tree or any. So I just wanted to relay that it's not too late right now to go see it.
Good work, Jim. Thank you. Okay, and now we're going to go to line one and talk to Sean in Clifton Park. Okay, Sean, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. What I have in my right eye is known as a lazy eye. I've had it since I was a child, a little better than 50 years. Back then, the only thing that they could do was to strengthen the muscle, you know, was the patch. And over the years, I never utilized the patch and strengthened the muscle. So the question is there anything that can be done surgically today that can help with the muscle strength so that the vision can be corrected in my right eye better than what it is? Right now, it's about 20 over 100. I mean, has technology come to a place with the eye that they can do something today where years ago they couldn't?
That's a great question, Sean. And again, that's a question I get often in the office. There's a couple terms in there that I want to clarify. Often people use the term lazy eye incorrectly, referring to like a turned eye or a weakened muscle in the eye. The technical term for lazy eye is called an amblyopic eye or amblyopia.
Whoa, here we go.
And that's an eye that cannot be corrected to 20/20 with corrective lenses. More frequently, amblyopia occurs due to a muscle imbalance where the eye is not looking straight or not coordinating with the other eye, and it's usually caught early on in life as a child. If the eyes are not working well together and one eye tends to drift off, the brain isn't going to recognize it and it's not going to develop to its full potential. Unfortunately, there's nothing to make an eye see better once it's fully developed, and if it has a weakened potential at that point, you can't correct it to 20/20. There are surgical options to straighten out the eye, not to make the muscle stronger per se, but to make the eyes look straight. So if people or adults tend to have an eye that wanders outwards or inwards or a wandering eye, that can be surgically corrected, but it will most likely not be able to be corrected to see better, if that answers your question.
It does, and I did have that surgery done by a neuro-ophthalmologist. And unfortunately, believe this or not, it was the eye used to turn to the right. Now, after probably 7-8 years, it's now inward. So it overcorrected itself. Mm-hmm. Initially, it was straight.
Sean, thanks for your call. We got a lot of people behind you. I appreciate it very much. Bye. I knew a guy with a wandering eye, but it had nothing to do with his vision. Okay, let's go to, let's see here. Linda in Schenectady. All right, Linda, you're on.
Hi, doctors. Thanks for taking my call. For the past dozen years or so, I've had a problem where my eyes tear profusely to the point where it's very annoying. My eyes, get very irritated from just the salt from the tears. The eyelids are irritated. I've been to doctors for this. I've had my tear ducts flushed, which was an interesting experience. And I've tried various drops. I don't think it's allergies because it's year-round. I have a theory because I do take numerous medications for blood pressure and diabetes, that type of thing. I don't know if maybe it's a reaction to meds because it seems to have started right around the time I started taking all these meds. Do you have any ideas or suggestions what it might be?
That's a great question, Linda. The eye can produce excessive tears, or a patient can have excessive tearing from the eyes for many different reasons, and it's almost impossible to diagnose over the radio or over the phone. But just some examples of what can be causing your excessive tearing. Yes, there could be blocked tear ducts. Your tears are not draining out properly. Going back to blepharitis, the word of the day, excessive blepharitis can cause tearing. There could be be a lag or loss of elasticity of the eyelids, where the eyelids are not pushing up against the eyeball sufficiently, causing a leakage of tears. And believe it or not, one of the more common reasons that eyes are teary are because they're too dry. And I think that's something that we talk about a lot in the office because it's counterintuitive and people don't really get it until I explain it. When the eyeball is too dry, the surface of the eyeball becomes very inflamed, and that sets off almost like a reflexive reaction within the eye to produce more tears, almost like a protective mechanism. So chronic inflammation due to excessive dryness can actually cause excessive tearing.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Oh, I see. Okay. I've seen ads on TV for different drops you can take for that.
Yeah, and again, without examining the eyeballs under the microscope, there's no way of knowing if those special dry eye drops are gonna work in any individual case.
I've tried over-the-counter ones, Systane and different things like that. They don't seem to have much impact on it.
Yeah,
so,
usually
they're not inexpensive.
No, they're not. And usually when an eyeball is constantly tearing and it doesn't respond to the over-the-counter type of dry eye therapies, it's usually an indication that there's just too much inflammation within the eye to be treated with that method. So usually at that point, they need some sort of therapy with medication.
Thank you, Linda. Okay, and that brings us up to Everson in Schenectady. Okay, Everson, you're on. Everson, hello, Everson in Schenectady. Hello once, hello twice, hello, goodbye. Okay, and so now we will go to Rose in Cornwall. Okay, Rose, it's your turn. Hi, Rose.
Hello?
Hey, Rose.
This is Rose.
Yep.
Hi. I have a question for the doctor, please. The eyesight in my left eye has become blurry because of diabetes. Is this a permanent or a temporary condition once the medications start kicking in for the diabetes? And can you buy some eye drops or anything to help?
Well, if there's been a change in your vision due to a new diagnosis of diabetes, first thing I would recommend is to see an eye doctor because the vision can be blurred for many different reasons. Sometimes excessive quick shifts in blood sugar can cause fluctuations in your vision. There could be small damage to the retina, leakages in the back of the eye causing blurry vision. The eye really needs to be examined to determine what the cause of the blurry vision is. So anytime we have a diabetic patient come in who believes there's been a recent change in their vision, we urge them to come in and have the eyeball examined because it can range from a very mild problem to a very serious problem.
But some of them are correctable, some of them are not.
Some of them are correctable. Some of them are naturally corrected when the blood sugar levels stabilize. Other damages to the back of the eye that can be related to diabetes may not be correctable. So that's
why. So what does the diabetes do? Is it a matter of the blood vessels?
Yes, the diabetes weakens the blood vessels in the retina, in the back of the eye. Mm-hmm. It makes them more fragile. And if those blood vessels start to leak, the fluid from the blood vessels start to fill up in the retina, and it can cause swelling within the retinal tissue, which can cause vision loss.
Rose, are you satisfied? Do you need more?
No, that's very good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Okay, Rose. And we'll go to Donna in Schenectady. Okay, Donna in Schenectady, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Donna.
My question is about cataracts. About 8 or 10 years ago, I was getting a little blurry vision in my left eye, and my doctor told me that I was developing cataracts. First of all, I need to tell you that I'm close to 72 years old, and I do not use prescription eyeglasses for anything, distance or close-up. But it seems to me the cataracts has improved, or it certainly hasn't gotten any worse. And I'm wondering, is it possible for cataracts to just naturally improve themselves over time?
That's my
question.
Donna,
get off the air so you
No, we may want to talk to you. Go ahead.
That's a good question, Donna. Cataracts can start to play tricks on you and play tricks on your vision as they advance. And some days they may be more noticeable than others. But again, going back to, I think we had another caller regarding cataracts, I tell my patients, you let us know when the cataracts are starting to bother you. If you feel that you're able to perform all of your daily activities without being hindered and your vision's good enough, then we'll just monitor the cataracts on an as-needed basis. But if you start to feel that your vision has been compromised to the point where you're not functioning properly, then we'll have a more serious discussion about having them taken out. But cataracts cause a blockage. They block. There's a clouding in the lens that causes a blockage of light from passing through the eye, and it. And in the more mild to moderate stages of the cataracts, it can play tricks on your vision. And some days it can be more noticeable than others, definitely.
But cataract surgery has gotten much better, hasn't it, over the years?
It has. It's a very quick and painless outpatient procedure in most cases.
Yeah.
Now that I've got you on the phone, I was wondering, before I had this diagnosis, I had not yet been diagnosed as having blood sugar issues. Subsequently, I have been treated for blood sugar issues, and my blood sugar is now well within the normal range without drugs or medication or anything, just watching my diet. I'm wondering, from the previous caller, could that have helped to clear up this blurriness, that maybe it wasn't truly a cataract, that the blurriness was caused by the blood sugar?
That's very likely. If you were having unstable blood sugar levels, that could have contributed to your instability in your vision, definitely.
Thank you, Donna. Yeah, Schenectady. Donna, we've got some people behind you.
That's okay. Yeah. I know.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your call.
Bye-bye. Yeah,
bye. All right, let's go to Linda, also in Schenectady. Today may be Schenectady Day. Okay, go ahead, Linda. You're on.
Hi. So I had a problem with my eye back in May. I went to two different doctors. One said it was conjunctivitis. The other said it was an allergy. So my first question is, could you have an allergy in only one eye?
That's a great question. Usually allergies, when a patient suffers from allergic conjunctivitis or eye allergies, usually it occurs in both eyes simultaneously. It's very rare. I don't think it really does occur in just one eye by itself, which that's usually a tip off to me when I'm looking at the patient's eyeballs under the microscope. If there's something affecting one eye more than the other, I'm probably not thinking allergy. I'm probably looking at other things, whether it be blepharitis or dry eye, or having to ask the patient if they wear contact lenses and seeing if there's any other inflammation that could be causing the symptoms.
I missed the earlier part of the show. I didn't catch blepharitis. I'll play it back later. But
play it back later. Inflammation of the eyelid or of the eyelash.
Very good.
So I'm not sure because I'm very squeamish, but I feel like the white part feels like it's burning. And sometimes I feel like I have something in it and I can't see it. And I try not to rub my eyes excessively. So if I had like an eyelash or say I do have cats, like a cat hair in there, and I don't get it out, does it flush out a different way? Does it naturally have an exit?
Well, usually when you get something in the eye has a natural reflexive tearing response to flush out any irritant, whether it be, you know, a grain of sand that gets in the eye when you're at the beach or a cat hair from, you know, from the home. Sometimes I've seen those little cat hairs or little pieces of dander or even eyelashes get trapped in certain places behind the eyelid, and sometimes they stick there and they won't come out until a professional kind of goes in there and removes it. So,
Linda, how committed are you to the cat?
Right. Well, the doctor said get the cats out of the bedroom, and he didn't agree. I did start wearing a face mask, an eye mask, and so now I don't feel like something's in it every morning. But it's still a little bothered. I'm probably going to – it's a mystery. The eye doctor's seen it twice.
Ditch the cat. Thank you. Thank you, Linda. Appreciate it.
All right.
Okay, we have time for maybe one more. If somebody wants to sneak one in real fast, you could. 1-800-348-2551. Mark in East Greenbush. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Yes, hello. I'd like to give you a little groundwork first. I had advanced stage 4B squamous cell carcinoma in my neck and throat. Due to that, the radiation treatments have destroyed my teeth. I've gone to hyperbaric oxygen treatments, 20 of them before the oral surgery to remove my teeth, and then 10 more afterwards. They told me do not have my eyes examined for a while afterwards because it might cause the hyperbaric treatments might very well cause problems with my eyes. Right now, I've been through both of them. I've been out of the treatments for 2 weeks, and so I've had a total of 30. I've been out of the treatments for 2 weeks. My right eye is starting to come back fairly well. My left eye is not. So when I try to read closed captioning on TV, I have to close one eye so I can see it fairly clearly.
Okay, listen, Mark, we're running out of time here. So a fast question and we'll give you a fast answer. Go ahead.
How long before my eyes come back to normal vision?
Unknown, Mark. Hyperbaric treatments. I've seen patients that have had hyperbaric oxygen treatments, and the blurry vision can range anywhere from temporary to permanent, depending on what parts of the eye have become affected by the excessive amounts of oxygen. So the short answer is, I don't know. You have to follow up with your eye doctor to have it checked out.
Well, do you expect it to come back completely?
He just said he doesn't know. What he was saying, Mark, is that he doesn't know because sometimes it's fast and sometimes it never goes away.
Correct, correct.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, bye. I am so sorry. I want to apologize to Rowan in Middlebury, who has blurry vision after reading the iPhone for an hour. You got a fast one on that one?
Yeah, whenever you're looking at something up close, whether it's a book, whether it's an iPhone, a tablet, a computer, your eye muscles that do the close focusing tend to lock up at a closer distance, and it could really cause a little spasm of your focusing system, and it could take some time for your eyes to adjust thereafter.
Okay, we're out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to the people. One, Rowan, who's left on the line. Thanks to Dr. Eric Veruto of Hudson Valley Eye Surgeons. You are a pleasure to have on the show today, Eric. And Hudson Valley Eye Surgeons for joining us. Support for the Medical Monday comes from Noble Home Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, offering design build services that feature passive solar and energy efficient designs, supporting the local economy using local materials. Prefabricated house kits also available. Noble-home.net. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for keeping us straight here, for answering the phones. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. And Ray Graff also helped out on the producing side. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned now for a news update.